Good morning. My name is David Sincox. I'm the Graduate Education Officer, and I'm very pleased to welcome you to the Learning to Teach Day. You are a group of the second group that we've had participate in the Learning to Teach Day in this academic year. You're probably about 130, 140 people in the room today. And we thought that it might be better, for those of you returning, you'll remember we did it in Leacock 132, which was a huge cavernous place, and we thought it might be better if we bring you all together in sort of a more cohesive group. That's why we're starting in Leacock 26, as opposed to the original proposed room, Leacock 132. So if you're confused with your schedule, that's why we're here. So this workshop is put together by Graduate Studies and Teaching and Learning Services, and it's brought to you to help you enhance your teaching competence. Can I see a raise of hands, those people who are returning to Learning to Teach for a second time? Wow. Okay. Welcome back. You'll notice there are some changes to the format. You'll notice that we are hosting the two plenaries, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and they are different than any other that we've had before. And then you have two workshops in the middle of the session that you've chosen from. This workshop, Learning to Teach, is really a place for you to gather resources, learn strategies, and then go off and expand on those strategies, learn more about them, try to integrate them into your own teaching. Some of you are teaching now. Some of you will be teaching in the future. Remember, this day is about utilizing teaching not only in an academic setting, but in a non-academic setting. So we all have to teach things. Whatever career you're going into, you have to tell somebody about what you do and why you do it. That is teaching. Just an announcement about the yellow booklet that you got. If you were looking for that booklet and you didn't get it, it's the course outline guide, and it's available on the Teaching and Learning Services website. The guide is, I'll make a link from LTT website to that guide. Today is going to start with a plenary and finish with a plenary. At 2:30, you're going to want to think about, well, do I stay for that end plenary or do I leave? This plenary is going to be great. The morning plenary is going to be fantastic, but that one... The afternoon plenary is going to be equally interesting. Professor Andre Kostopoulos is going to come and talk to you. He's a Principal's Prize winner, and he loves teaching, and he wants to tell his story about teaching in large classes. It's not easy, but he's found a unique way to tap into students and get them engaged. So I encourage you to remember at 2:30, think, oh, yeah, I can stay another hour. Okay? I would like to introduce to you now the student that has coordinated this. He's from the Faculty of Education in, I'll just introduce Jason Harley and let him introduce himself. You have a minute, Jason.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to see you here, bright and early. I know it's earlier than probably most of you are used to waking up, myself included. That's why we're on coffee number 3. Thank yous aside also. I just wanted to mention that, again, Learning to Teach Day is a really inductive or bottom-up process. Learning to Teach Day is really developed and tailored to fit the needs of graduate students and postdoctoral students. So please let us know how we're doing. If you want to come up to us, we'll be at the volunteer table or the information desk. If you want to say hi, let me know how a session goes, please let me know. And please fill out the evaluations because we really read them. That's what informs each iteration, each new Learning to Teach Day. We take that process, we'll redesign the model, offer new workshops, bring in new plenary speakers. It's really all tailored to meet your needs and your interests. So thank you very much for coming in, and we have a really exciting day that we've got planned for you, and I hope you all learn a lot and have a great time. So thank you again. Oh, my department, Educational Psychology. Thank you.
That's one of the things when you get up in front of a microphone, make sure you have all the little details here. Jason is our graduate education assistant, and we have 3 of them, Sophia Kapczynski, Aaron Lafferty, Jason Harley, and Jason's portfolio is teaching competence and learning to teach today. So he's done a lot of work. He's brought together the volunteers, and he's basically coordinated this on your behalf. One of the things that I hope, as I was walking around earlier, Some people said you're not teaching, but you'd like to get involved in teaching. I encourage you to send me an email if you have a plan for a workshop. Let me introduce Laura Weiner.
I just want to, why don't we take 30 seconds and let the people who are standing at the back find seats?
Yep.
Because there are a lot sort of scattered in here. There's some over there, because there are plenty of seats, but it's hard when you're at the back to be going, excuse me.
If you have a seat beside you that's empty, could you actually raise your hand?
Yeah. Okay, so there's quite a few seats, though. So.
Thank you.
Okay, so we want to go around the
Okay, so without further ado, my next task is, and as you can see, teaching is also a process where we try to identify what's happening in the moment and address what's happening to make it easier. As you come in, there are seats down in front here. So without further ado, I'm very pleased to be able to introduce our plenary this morning. Carolyn Samuel teaches English for academic purposes, oral and written, at the McGill Writing Center, and oral skills methodology in the Faculty of Education. She has experience teaching ESL, English for Second Languages, and EFL, English for Foreign Language, and doing teacher training both in Canada and abroad. Carolyn is a recipient of the Principal's Prize for Excellence in Teaching in 2009. So I'm very pleased to introduce our morning plenary, Carolyn Samuel.
Thank you very much, David, and I'll try to live up to those expectations. It's wonderful to see so many people out here today. How are you? Awake? Ready to go? Yeah? Okay. You know who I am, very briefly, Carolyn Samuel, but today you're going to be talking to some people next to you, and it's important, I think, for you to know who they are. So I'm going to give you a minute just to say hello to the person next to you and say your name, look right, look left. Give you a minute to do that, and then I'll call you back. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, very brief introductions. Okay, just very brief introductions so that you know who you're talking to a little later on. I've entitled my talk today, My Responsibility, Your Responsibility, the Teacher-Student Partnership. Now, I actually have a message that I would like to convey to you today, which is maybe not explicit with the title. But I would like you to think for a minute about what that message might be based on the title. And I would like you to talk with somebody next to you and come up with a sentence, a full grammatical sentence, which reflects my background in language teaching, a grammatical sentence that conveys a message. So I'm asking you to think about what my message today is going to be to you, using just the title here. So talk to somebody. What do you think the takeaway is going to be today? Go ahead. I'll give you a minute. Talk to somebody near you. You don't have to agree. You don't have to decide on one sentence. Just talk about what you think. Go ahead. All right, I'm going to interrupt you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to interrupt you. I'm glad to know that you have a lot to say. Okay, so you've generated some ideas. I'm actually not going to ask you right now what those ideas are. Hold those thoughts, because we're going to come back to them a little bit later, and we'll see if really what I intended is what you could anticipate. When I was asked to give this plenary, I really had to think hard about what I wish I had known about teaching when I started, because actually I knew an awful lot about teaching when I started for two reasons. One, my background is in education. So unlike you, many of you have studied in different disciplines, could be engineering, nursing, law, all kinds of things. My discipline is education. So I went to university to learn to be a teacher. And I've studied in the field of education. So when I actually started teaching, I knew a lot. Doesn't mean I knew everything, but I already knew a lot about what would happen in a classroom. But there's another reason I knew a lot about teaching. And that was simply because I'd been a student for so many years. And that is the same as all of you. You know a lot about teaching because you've observed teachers. So you know things just maybe unwittingly, but you've observed. And you've made judgments about teachers. I mean, you can recall comments, I'm sure, you know, talking to people saying things like, wow, that class is amazing because the teacher prepared. Well, that tells you something. I mean, if you think about it, that tells you something about teaching. So as a student, one really knows a lot about teaching. From a student perspective, how do you know that teaching takes effort? Well, you know that teaching takes effort. Just to come back to that idea about preparation, you know if a lecture is well organized or if a teacher has prepared activities for you to do during class, if there are thoughtful questions that are prepared for you, then you know that takes effort. Even if you have never, ever taught, you know this as a student. So here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to think about yourself as a student, which all of you can do, but I know that some of you have teaching experience. Don't call on your teaching experience now. Call on your student experience. How do you know, for example, that teaching can be a positive experience, or that teaching can be a frustrating experience, or that grading is time-consuming? How do you know that from a student perspective? Take a couple of minutes. I'm not going to give you much time. Talk to the people you know next to you. Go ahead. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to interrupt you, and let's hear a few ideas. You can address anyone that you like, just tell us which one. So could we have a hand up, somebody who'd like to say how he or she knows that teaching can be positive, can be frustrating, or that grading is time-consuming? Please, with a loud voice.
Teaching takes effort because most teachers sweat.
Visibly?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good. Let's have another one. Over here, please. Yes.
Teaching is a positive, can be a positive experience because you can tell when the educator comes in and stands at the podium, they're happy, they're smiling, they're in a good mood, you can feel the pleasantness in their voice. Another thing is their slides. I can see it in their slides, whether they took the time to make a good presentation and that they're, like you said before, they're prepared and they're not just reading off their slides. It's like they're engaging because they're having a conversation with you. It's not lecturing. It's like they're talking to you.
Okay. And can we have one more? At the back, loud voice, please.
We know that grading is time-consuming because it always seems to take such a long time from when you hand in the paper.
I'll have something to say about that later. Okay. All right. So already you have some ideas about teaching. Even if you have never taught, you know these things because you are students or you've been students for a while. So as I thought about preparing this talk and I thought about how we know things about teaching, even if we've never taught, the idea of a partnership relationship between teachers and students really came to the fore. And it's a two-way street. And I think for successful learning to happen or for there to be a successful teaching and learning endeavor, both parties, both teachers and students, have to assume certain responsibilities. So if they assume those responsibilities, there's a good chance that learning can be fostered. This is something that I was not really aware of when I started teaching, and I wish I'd been more aware of that when I started. I learned about it, or became aware about this, during a teaching practicum experience. So as I said, my background is in teaching, and people learning to teach do what we call a practicum, or in Quebec it's known as a stage, or sometimes it's called an internship, which means you go into a school for a period of weeks, and you teach, you practice teach to become skilled at teaching. So for my first practicum, I was placed at a high school in Montreal. It was kind of a rough high school. There were myriad cultural groups there, a lot of discipline problems. The kids were tough. It was, you know, this is cliche what I'm going to say, but students threatened to slash the tires of my car. It's true, they did, and I had to park my car away from the school because I was scared. In the meantime, I've gotten rid of my car. So it was one of those typical tough environments. And I spent most of my teaching days just trying to discipline the students, and I felt very frustrated because I couldn't really teach. And I even wondered, have I chosen the right profession? This isn't what I want to do. I want to teach. I don't want to be wrestling with students and fighting with them to help them learn. And my co-op teacher, a co-op teacher is the teacher who hosts you at the school and acts as your mentor during those weeks when you're doing your practice teaching. My co-op teacher said this to me: the teacher's responsibility is to teach and the student's responsibility is to learn. And this really helped me to put into perspective my role as the teacher. I couldn't be responsible for everything. There were some things I could be responsible for, but students had to assume some responsibility for their learning. And I could only do so much. So this was kind of a pivotal moment for me in my beginning teaching career. But something else happened at that time. Still at this stage, this practicum, I had this bit of advice, and I was thinking, well, the students really need to do their part. But I looked at the students, and I thought, you know what, these guys, these students, they can't do their part properly, because many of them were hungry. They hadn't been given a proper breakfast, and many of them were tired, because they had younger siblings and they had to look after their younger siblings in the evening and in the morning also. So these students were in no position to assume their responsibility for learning because they had other more pressing needs. They were hungry. They were tired. They weren't really into learning at that moment. And I couldn't change that. I couldn't feed all the children, and I couldn't look after their siblings so that they would have more free time, time to sleep. That was beyond my control. I had my responsibilities, but I couldn't be responsible for everything. I'm going to come back to that idea a little later on in the context of university students. These were secondary students I was working with. I'd like to share another story with you about the teacher-student partnership, maybe a little closer to home because it is at a university. This is not a personal story. This is a story that a friend told me. And it happened at a university in Ontario. I think it was a biology class. I'm not sure about that. First day of class, undergraduate class, and the students are all excited. First day, curious about what's going to happen. The professor walks in, distributes the syllabus. The students look over it. And then the professor calls the class to order and goes over the syllabus. And at the end, he says, "I'd like you to know, I've never failed a student." And there's this audible sigh of relief as the students think, not only think, they say to each other, "Hey, this is going to be a breeze. Hey, we're just going to get through. We don't have to worry about the work, you know, that he's not going to fail us." So a lot of chatter about that. And then the professor called the class to order again, and he said, "Yes, it's true. I've never failed a student. But students have failed themselves." And there was, you can imagine how the atmosphere in the room changed when students probably realized that they had a role in their learning and that it wasn't all about the teacher. So today I'd like to center my talk on this partnership relationship between teacher and student, and how I think a good working relationship, and if both parties assume their responsibilities, one can foster good learning. So to address this, I'm going to talk about the relationship in the context of the classroom. The classroom and assessment and grading, and also interpersonal communication. And I'm not going to talk without stopping for the next 30 minutes. I'm going to ask you to do some talking as well shortly. So first, what have I done? I thought I pressed this. Maybe this will bring it back. There. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. All right. So the first thing, class organization or preparation. I give a workshop for TESOL students, students in the Teaching English as a Second Language program at McGill who are doing their Bachelor of Education. I give a workshop for them on how to be an organized teacher. And this is one of the things that we talk about, that good teachers, while they may be detail-oriented, but if you are a disorganized person in your private life, you will find that teaching will probably be uncomfortable for you. Okay, I think there's room for debate there, but I do believe the sentence that's underlined. At the very least, teachers must be organized in their professional and teaching duties. There are different ways to be organized. People have different systems, but I think it's really important to have a system and in some way be organized for your teaching. Now, before I get into what I think the teacher responsibilities are with respect to the class, and you can also think about the course, not just a class, but the course, before I tell you my ideas about the teacher responsibility in terms of organization and preparation for class or for a course, and what I believe student responsibilities are, I'm going to ask you to think about those and talk to somebody near you. What are your ideas? What do you think a teacher's responsibilities are with respect to organization and preparation, and what do you think a student's responsibilities are with respect to organization and preparation for the class or for a course? There are no right answers, no wrong answers. They can all be right answers. Okay, take a minute, please. I'll call you back to order shortly. you getting the interaction? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's hear a few ideas. I'm sorry I'm not giving you a lot of time, and I'm sorry if that's frustrating, but there's a lot that I'd like us to talk about today. So can we get a few ideas? Teacher responsibilities, student responsibilities?
The teacher is responsible for providing accessible, correct, complete structure.
Okay, can everybody at the back here? Yeah, okay, I'm seeing nods. Yes, okay, yes, somebody, is that a hand up? I know, I don't know how easy it is to walk around with that, but thank you, that's a good suggestion. Okay, do we have another voice? Somebody else who'd like to offer an idea about teaching responsibilities or student responsibilities? Yes, over here. Laura, thanks.
Have a clear and structured syllabus.
Okay, other ideas? I'm standing here. Maybe that's why people are putting their hands up on that side of the room. Over here. Right here.
So I think we heard a lot that the teacher has to sort of give the way and say what's important. But I think it's the student's responsibility to go and research what has been marked as important and try to understand it. But then the teacher should spell out where to go in case you do not understand it, either supporting material or the teacher or the TA. Say.
Okay. Some good ideas. All right, so I'm going to share some of mine. We'll come back to yours shortly. I do think a teacher has a responsibility to plan a course, and I'm not concerned about you reading all the fine print. I want you to know that this is a course outline for a 13-day intensive course. It's an undergraduate course I've given in the summer, and it shows students at a glance everything that they're going to do over the 13-day course. I color code everything. Not everybody has to do that, of course. But I think there's a clear indication, I'm just enlarging one box here, of what's going to be covered on a particular day, what the graded assignment is, that's the GA, that's my coding system, and HW is homework. So there's no ambiguity for students about what they need to do. And I think it is indeed the teacher's responsibility to plan the term, to plan a class, to plan due dates, to set expectations, and to ensure that those expectations are clear. Now, the clear part is a challenge because clarity is relative. What's clear to me is not necessarily clear to students, or to you in this case. So we have to work at that. I'll come back to that idea. So we have a responsibility to plan in order to ensure that students have productive class time. That's up to us. Okay? We have to prepare so that the circumstances are right for that. What do students have to do? Students need to prepare for class, of course. They need to do the homework that they're asked to do. I think other things that you said, they need to go beyond what happens in the classroom. That's true, too. And I think I'd like to add to this by saying that Yeah, I think just maybe work with the importance, the idea that it's really important to show students that there are expectations and you're going to follow through with them. Let me go on then to assessment and grading, because that's kind of connected to this. So assessment and grading, we assess students all the time. Okay, that's what teachers do. We assess students, we assess their work. But students also assess teachers. And we know that, of course, through formal course evaluations, that's no mystery. There are formal course evaluations, and teachers are assessed through those. There are also anecdotal evaluations when students say things like, that class rocks, okay? That's an assessment of the class and of the quality of teaching, perhaps. Or when students say, I'm never, ever taking a course with that professor again, it sucks. That's an assessment of the course. So that kind of thing happens all the time. There's other assessment. And this is something that I didn't know when I started teaching. I didn't know, and I wish I had known, the extent to which a teacher is under scrutiny at all levels. Everything is under scrutiny. And I'll give you an example of when it was yet again highlighted to me very recently. As you can see, I don't wear very much jewelry. And one day, I came into class wearing a bracelet. And I was wearing a long-sleeved shirt, longer than this. Okay, long-sleeved shirt, so the bracelet wasn't really evident. And at some point, a student at the back of the room said to me, and just to give you some context, I teach relatively small classes, around 20, 25 students, sometimes a little larger, but I don't normally teach in auditoriums like this. I teach in intimate rooms. So a student at the back of the room said, wow, that's a really nice bracelet you have on. And I thanked him for the compliment, but really I was quite taken aback, and just the fact that I remembered it and I'm telling you about this today tells you something about the power of that comment. But I didn't realize that students look at teachers, they look at every aspect of us. Hey, they look at our appearance, and they comment on the appearance. I mean, and I never thought that that was going to be part of teaching, that people would comment on what I wear, on my hair, all kinds of things. Yeah, you don't think about that. And I kind of wish I'd known, because I think it would have affected my behavior with students in some way. I think that would have been a useful thing for me to know. And just if I can give you a bit of advice, think about having yourselves videotaped when you're doing some teaching. And then watch the video, maybe even with the sound off, once with the sound on, maybe once with the sound off, so you can get an idea of how students perceive you in the classroom. This can be an extremely enriching experience. It can be a tough experience. Actually, I teach a course in oral presentation skills. And in that course, students have to do two oral presentations that are recorded, and then they are obliged to watch the video and do some self-assessment. That's part of an assignment. And I always tell students that that is the toughest part of the course, having to watch themselves on video and then do some self-critiquing. So I would suggest you do that. It's very easy, of course, in this day and age to video. You can do it on a cell phone, or there are little cameras. It's such a simple thing these days to video yourself or to have somebody video you while you're teaching. If you're less inclined to do that, at the very least, ask a peer, a colleague, to come into your class and watch you teach and then give you some constructive feedback and ask that person to let you know how you are perceived in the classroom. I do that even though I've been teaching for many years. Just last year I asked a colleague to come in again. It's a good refresher. It's healthy to be reminded about what students see in the classroom. I also keep a mirror. I keep a mirror in my office right next to my computer. and I check myself in the mirror before I go into every class. Just want to be sure, you know, my teeth are okay, my hair's all right, okay? It's not about vanity, but you want to look okay when you go into class. Okay, so those are just a few bits of advice about the assessment, related to the assessment that teachers are subjected to. Now, assessment and grading, before I give you some of my ideas about assessment and grading and the teacher responsibilities and the student responsibilities, I'm going to turn it over to you again. And what do you think are the teacher's responsibilities, or at least some of them, regarding assessment and grading, and what responsibilities does a student have with respect to assessment and grading? Over to you. I'll give you a couple of minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear some of your ideas about teacher and student responsibilities with respect to assessment and grading. So what ideas do you have? Hands up. I know you have ideas because people were talking. Okay, let's go here. Yeah, Imtiaz, if you could, thank you.
I think it's important for teachers to be consistent and fair when they mark.
Okay, is the mic working? Did everybody hear? Yeah? Okay, good.
Hello.
Thanks. Okay, good. Can we have another idea? Okay, up here.
We think that the teacher should spend a decent amount of time in actually trying to make come up with a fair grade and a fair assessment for the student.
Okay. Over there. Okay, we'll go here and then we'll go there. That's fine.
I think it's a student's responsibility also to realize that that is sometimes the grade that they deserved. And to not complain about it.
Okay. Well, we'll go.
Teachers shouldn't be not so alien and not too much restricted. Like, they should balance the grades.
Okay. And there was one more hand over here. Yes. Down here. Yes.
Yeah. Just yes, the students, they should accept kind of the grade, but also the students' responsibility is to, also understand what's being graded and, question the grading when it needs to be questioned, because that, in turn, will help the teacher learn
but also the teacher needs to provide clarity in what's being assessed and graded.
Okay, so let's come back to that idea of clarity. And I said before, what's clear for me is not necessarily clear for my students. So I agree with things that you guys have said. I think it's the teacher's responsibility to grade fairly, to take the time, as you said, to go over the material and assess it properly with due consideration. What else? It's important to make the grading process transparent so that students know where they are succeeding in their learning, which is very motivating for them, of course, and so that they know what areas they need to improve. So here I'm going to give you an example of something that I do in that course. I showed you the course outline earlier. The students have to do an exercise where they read a text and they write some short answers. They see this grading rubric the day the course starts. First day. It's in the syllabus. It's online. It's in WebCT. So there should be no mystery for them. They can see that for this assignment, 60% of that grade has to do with the content of the answer, accuracy and clarity, and giving support for what they say. Okay, well, I know what that means, but that doesn't mean the students can interpret it. So this is part of the assignment instructions, which are explicit. Again, I'm not asking you to read all that fine print. What is circled here, I've put this in large, these are the circled items where students can see examples of appropriate answers and examples of inappropriate answers. And then they have concrete examples, which you don't need to read through all of them, but there are example answers there of what would not get full marks and what would get full marks. And they see this the day the course starts. So there is no ambiguity. And then, of course, students have the option of asking questions. Now, of course, I do my best to be explicit with grading, but it does happen that students challenge grades. Some of you mentioned that. Students will say, well, I really think I should have a higher mark. So inevitably, there's a knock on my door, or I get an email saying, I don't think you graded this fairly. Can you raise the grade? So what I do is I shift that responsibility to the student, because I believe I've done my best. I've taken the time, as you said, to go through the work, and I've used a rubric that I think is fair, and I've done my best to assess properly. In the case where a student contests the grade, I ask the student to make a case for me to change the grade. And I ask the students to do this in writing. This could be a paragraph, half a page, not even half a page. It's not a long case. But I ask them to make a case for me to change the grade. And in the case, they have to provide evidence that they have met the criteria in the assignment and that I should not have deducted marks because they've actually included what they were supposed to include in the assignment. And then I ask the student to meet with me once I've read the case and we discuss it, and that's great. So I have two questions for you. My first question is, what percentage of students do you think actually take the time to make the case and come to meet with me to discuss their grade? Now, I have to say, I don't have huge numbers of students contesting grades, and I think it's partly because I make an effort to be explicit to have a transparent grading system. But of the students who come to see me, let's do this with hands up. I didn't do clicker questions today, and this is a low-stakes question. So if you think it's more than 50% of my students who contest grades, which is a small number in and of itself, more than 50% who make the case and come to talk to me about it, hands up. More than 50%? Okay, some of you think so. Okay. You are in the minority, and that's true. Mostly students do not take the time to make the case. I don't know why. I'd like to believe that it is because when they go through their work, they realize that they haven't met the criteria. However, for all I know, they just don't want to take the time. I've never asked. I don't know. But the reality is mostly they don't. Now, my next question, of the students who take the time to make the case and who meet with me, what percentage of the time do you think I actually change the grade? Do you think it's more than 50% of the time that I change the grade? Hands up. You betcha. More than 50% of the time. What I do, the assignments I give students are not discrete answers. They're not yes, no. They're not right, wrong. we're working with language and sound uses of language, and there is room for subjectivity. So if the student can make a cogent argument, you bet I changed that grade. And I think that some learning has actually gone on through that process if the student has gone through the assignment and sought the criteria and then has been able to articulate that to me. That's a very good sign for me. Okay, so just to summarize, teacher has the responsibility to be fair and make the grading clear and transparent. The student has the responsibility to follow the instructions, do his or her best to respond to the assignment instructions and to the criteria demanded. And if that student doesn't understand, then I think that student has a responsibility to speak to the teacher about that. That's another thing. I'm always stunned when I give back an assignment and a student comes up to me after and says, I don't understand why you deducted marks here. And I look at it and I say, well, you didn't do this thing. And the student says, well, I didn't know what that meant. Well, I can't be responsible for that. The student has to be responsible for asking questions at the appropriate time, before the fact and not after. I'm still happy to answer the question after, but it's not of as much use once the assignment is given back. Okay. Just checking how we're doing for time. I'm going to move to my last point here, interpersonal communication. And when I started teaching, I wasn't really aware of the power a teacher had to set the tone for a course, to set the tone for a whole term, for even just a class on a daily basis. I mean, we all know that teachers lead the class. Okay, we know that kind of, you know, well, from being a student, as we talked about earlier. But I wasn't really fully aware of how much power a teacher really had. And I think had I known that when I started teaching, that would have had an influence on the way I communicated with students. And I'd like to talk about two things here. One is respect. And I'm not going to talk about this in terms of separate teacher and student responsibilities. I think there's a joint responsibility here. There must be mutual respect for there to be successful teaching and learning. When I come into class, I usually say good morning or good afternoon, and I ask people how they are. That's how I like to be treated. I don't yell at students. I don't want people to yell at me. I try not to humiliate students because I don't like to be humiliated. So I like to deal with students the way I like people to deal with me, with respect. And I think that creates a conducive environment for learning. Humility, the teacher has to be prepared to say that he or she is wrong. And the first time it happens that a student points out that you've erred, it's humbling. You need to be humble. That's okay. We don't know everything. Teachers don't know everything, and students have to know that teachers don't know everything. So our responsibility is to recognize that we don't know everything, convey that to students, and students might have to go beyond the teacher. And I think you mentioned this earlier, that I think it was you, that students have to go beyond the teacher for their learning. That's part of their responsibility. They cannot get all the answers to everything from one person standing at the front of the room. And a stock phrase in my classes is, don't believe me because I stand before you at the front of the room. Prove me wrong. And when that happens, there's teaching and learning going on for, well, there's learning going on for everybody. And that's a good thing. I think that captures the essence of what I wanted to share today. Now, before we get to questions, I'd like to ask, before we get to a part where you can ask me some questions, I'd like to ask you what you think the takeaway message is. And I asked you to think about this earlier so that you'd have something going on in your mind about the context or what the connections might be. So I'd like some feedback now. What do you think my takeaway message is today? Your one sentence, which maybe you want to modify from the beginning based on what you've heard today. So can we get some feedback? What do you think the takeaway message is? What do I want you leaving here with today? You know what? Maybe talk to somebody next to you first. I'll give you a minute. Talk, and then I'll call you back. Gentlemen, I'm not giving you much time. I'm sorry you don't have much time, but you're going to be moving on to some other activities shortly, so we have to contain this. And can we get some ideas, one sentence to capture the message? The gentleman up there. Yeah, David, if you can pass the microphone up. I was a student to start with. Okay. It's true. Let's keep going. Let's get some other ideas. What's the message? What do I want you to leave here with?
Both the student and teacher have a responsibility in making the class an effective learning experience. Yeah.
Okay. Let's keep going. Yeah, over here.
Think of how you would want to be taught and teach that way.
Nice idea. Let's keep going. Do we have any others? Right here. Yes. Loud voice, please.
Okay. My neighbor said teaching is a cooperative venture. I would just modify by saying teaching and learning is a cooperative venture.
Okay. Can we get one more? Yes. Over here.
I would say it's multidimensional. Like you have the intellectual part, the social part, the psychological component. So it's like full of bubbles. It's not only one line just giving information.
Okay. So these are all nice thoughts, and I think they're really right on. If I can capture my summary right here in a word cloud, I think teachers and students are partners in the teaching and learning relationship, and they have to work together for there to be successful teaching and learning. So I think you guys are right on with all the things that you've said. And we have about 2 minutes until the time is up, so I would like to ask you now, do you have any questions? Is there anything I touched on that you'd like to know more about? So we'll go here first. Yes?
So what do you do with high school students for fundraising?
It's an interesting question. To be frank, I left teaching high school and I came to teach at the university level because, no, I'm being sincere, okay? I don't think I really had the skills to deal with that. And I learned a lot of good things from my co-op teacher about being understanding. And what really happens is you adjust your expectations about what you can ask students to do. So there can be learning, but maybe you can't move as quickly. Maybe you can't be as ambitious as you would like. But you can adjust those expectations and work with the students at a level that's appropriate for them. And it might not even be something academic. It could be something about life learning, given their circumstances. So I'd say adjusting expectations and what you hope students to learn. But there are students at the university level who are also not ready to learn. It happens that there are students dozing in my class. And I used to think that was all about me. Like, oh, I must be so boring and my class isn't good. But you know what? It's not always about you. It's not. Students have lives. They are busy people. They can be, maybe they were sick the night before, and so they're dozing in class because they were sick. Or maybe they look after children. I teach a lot of graduate students who have families, so maybe they have other responsibilities. So in those cases, I try to, you know, discreetly talk to the student while somebody, other people are working, and I might say, are you feeling okay? And do you need to talk to somebody? So that whole idea of not being ready for learning, that can happen at the university level too, and I think it's a teacher's responsibility to help students who are in difficult situations manage their responsibilities. Okay, there was a hand that went up over here, yes?
Yeah, I was just curious why learning is displayed, you know, like relatively in a small...
Okay, do you know do you know how this is created?
No.
Okay, I'll explain. This is a word cloud, and what you do is you copy and paste a whole lot of text into a program, a computer program, and then you click on a button and it creates an image like this. And what you see is the frequency, the large words represent the frequency of that word in your text. So what I did, I did an outline of this talk, and I had some ideas, and I put them all in a text, and then I clicked the button. And this means that I didn't use the word learning as much as I used the word partnership, students, yeah, and teaching and responsibility.
That's my point.
Yeah,
like,
so...
the whole, I mean, exercise of teaching is at the end. I mean, like, you want students to learn, right?
I think it's true. There's no question about that. And maybe I need to say learning in greater prominence in the future when I get a second shot at this. Right, David? Okay. Thank you. Okay, let's go here.
Do you consider the difficulties in the personal life of the students? For example, you said that they have families or they have difficulties in their scoring or in their grading. Do you ask every someone comes with them? Is there an excuse and you adjust the grading or scoring, or should we do that?
Okay, did everybody at the back hear the question? Okay, the question is, do I adjust students' grades in the case where they are experiencing personal difficulties? So do I take into account that they have personal problems, if it's the case that they have personal problems, do I adjust their grades accordingly? My course outlines all the syllabi say, if you have a problem meeting a deadline, talk to me before, not after. So I expect that students will say to me, there is a problem, and they can tell me what it is, and then I will extend the deadline. I will not give them a grade that's like a better grade just because they have a problem. I will give them more time to do an assignment. I will help them do an assignment, but they will not get a higher grade simply because they have personal problems. Now, if it happens that they tell me after an assignment is due, that they, the day it's due, let's say that they couldn't complete it because of some personal tragedy or illness, mostly I ask for some evidence, you know, a doctor's note. Sometimes it's happened that there was a death in the family. I do not ask for a death certificate. Students have enough to deal with when there's a death. So you make judgments, and you feel out the situation. So extending deadlines and helping students complete the work, yes. Giving higher grades, absolutely not. Just based on a personal problem. No, that's out of the question. David, do we have time for one more?
Yes.
Okay, one more. I've taken people from here. Okay, let's go here. I will never say that, but go ahead.
How do you remain objective in your grading?
Okay, so the question is, how do I remain objective in my grading when I'm grading the work of students I don't like? Well, that doesn't exist, that I don't like students. No, but the answer to your question is, you've shown a rubric. Okay, there's a marking rubric, and you have to do your best to stick to that rubric. And just as I ask students to include support for an answer, evidence of something, when I give students feedback, I feel I need to somehow justify the grade I give, which means I have to have the evidence there. So if I say to a student, You haven't done this, that, or the other. I need to be able to show that student where that is missing in the assignment. And that helps me to be honest about grading. So I have to be able to make my case for the grade. And I hope that's going to be adequate and that it will not, students' behavior will maybe not influence my grading practices. Okay. I see the time is up, and we've gone even a little bit over time. I'd like to thank you all very much and wish you a wonderful day here today. I've attended this day myself, and I've participated giving workshops. It's an exciting day, and I think you'll get a lot out of it. So enjoy. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank Carolyn Samuel for offering a wonderful lecture and for your participation. And she really made an effort today to make this interactive to show you that it can be done. So again, Carolyn Samuel.
The evaluation.